This is the sixth day of this November 2008 seven-day session. Now we will take up another koan this morning. This is in the Blue Cliff record. Number 98. There are 100 cases in the Blue Cliff record, and it's called Tempio's Two Mistakes. When Tempio was on a pilgrimage visiting teachers, he called on Sayin. Tempio always would say, "Do not say you understand Buddhism. I cannot find a single man who can speak of it." One day, Sayin heard him and called him by name. Jui, that's some kind of nickname. Tempio raised his head. Sayin said, "Wrong." Tempio walked a few steps away, and Sayin once again said, "Wrong." Tempio turned and approached Sayin, who said, "Those two wrongs just now, were they my wrongs or your wrongs?" Tempio said, "My wrongs." Sayin said, "Wrong." Tempio said nothing. Sayin said, "Stay here this summer and let us discuss the two wrongs." But Tempio went away. Later, when Tempio was abbot of his own temple, he said to his disciples, "When I was on a pilgrimage, I was blown by the wind of events to Abbot Sayin, who told me twice that I was wrong and tried to keep me there over the summer to wait for him to deal with me. It was not then that I was wrong, however, but when I first started south on my pilgrimage, I already knew that I was wrong." We do have a little material on these two protagonists. Tempio is the Japanese name of Tianping. We don't have any biographical material on him, except his the occasion of his enlightenment. This is when he was with a master. Let's just leave it at that. He was with a certain master, and he was one of the congregation. And he started to ask a question when the master said, "This hairless ass." And at that, he was suddenly enlightened. How about that one? I think, you know, he meant ass as a donkey. But then we have some exchanges after he had become a master himself. A monk asked, let's make it Tempio again, the Japanese name. A monk asked Tempio, "How does someone leave the three worlds?" The three worlds is just a way of describing all phenomenal things. Usually means the world of form, the world of desire, and the world of formlessness. So, how does someone leave the three worlds? Tempio said, "When the three worlds arrive, then you will leave them." A monk asked, "What is the style of the master's house?" House is a Zen way of saying lineage, really. What is the style of the master's house? Tempio said, "Revealing earth." What could be more obvious than revealing earth? A monk asked, "What is Buddha?" Tempio said, "Not pointing at heaven or earth." The monk asked, "Why not point at heaven or earth?" Tempio said, "I alone am the honored one." Clearly a reference to the legend of when the newborn Buddha took seven steps, pointed one finger to heaven and one finger down to the earth, and said, "Above the heavens and below the heavens, I alone, the world honored one," or "I alone am the honored one." A monk asked, "What is Tempio?" Tempio said, "Eight dips and nine bumps." That sounds like some cultural insight would be useful for that one. It escapes me. Although, despite my resistance, I picture an ice cream cone with eight dips on it. A monk asked, "How do those who drink the deep, clear waters at Qingxi not rise or fall?" How do those who drink the deep, clear waters of Qingxi, which literally means clear creek, how do those who drink the deep, clear waters of Qingxi not rise or fall? Tempio said, "What will you dream of next?" A monk asked, "The great congregation has assembled. What do you say to them?" Tempio said, "Where the incense smoke rises, heaven and earth may be seen." And then, for this sigh-in, this koan is challenging, and among other respects, it's in that there are two names used for each of these guys. So we're just going to stick to Tempio and sigh-in. This sigh-in also, there's no, there's really nothing, almost nothing recorded about him, not even dates. A monk asked sigh-in, "What is a Zen monastery?" Sigh-in said, "A forest of thorns." The monk then asked, "What is a person who lives there?" Sigh-in replied, "A badger, a weasel." Here he may have been pointed at the questioner. A monk asked, "What is something that is unchangeable?" Sayan said, "A rock for pounding fabrics." monk asked, "What is Lin Ji's shout?" Sayan said, "A 30,000-pound crossbow is not used on a mouse." The monk said, "Where is the master's compassion?" Sayan hit him. That's all the material we have on these two guys. So back to the koan. When Tempyo was on a pilgrimage visiting teachers, he called on Sayan. This was the custom in ancient China, where Zen monks would be what the Japanese call an ango, or we used to call an on period of intensive practice, followed by a period of 2 or 3 months or maybe more, where the monks would all scatter and wander around and meet other teachers and go to other temples. This became something that seemed to have been misused, and there are things we've read here in Taisho by the great masters saying, you got to spend less time traveling around and more in the zendo. But we're told that Tempyo had this shtick where he would say, "Do not say you understand Buddhism. I cannot find a single man who can speak of it." In what way did he say that? That's one of the questions, the points of the koan. The koans are like new coloring books with just the outlines in them, and the student has to color in the character, the personality of the different masters and monks just by intuiting what's between the words that are provided on the page. The implication seems to be that he alone can speak of Buddhism, but can't find a single person who can. He was still a monk. He wasn't a teacher yet at this point. And one day, Sayan heard him saying this and called him by name. Tempyo. When Tempyo raised his head, Sayan said, "Wrong." Now, what's going on here? All he did was raise his head, and he was told, "Wrong." What did Sayan mean? That first part, I'll be reading here from the full Blue Cliff record as translated by Thomas and J.C. Cleary, and the some of the commentary that was written by the compiler, Yuan Wu. In that first thing where do not say you understand Buddhism, I cannot find a single man who can speak of it. The commentator says, this fellow is right, but nevertheless, he's like the sacred tortoise dragging his tail. And then Tempio walked a few steps away. How did he do that? After being branded wrong. We don't know whether this was in public or other people were around. Walked a few steps away and Sayin once again said, wrong. Now Tempio turned and approached him. And how did he do that? Menacingly? Questioningly? Before he could say anything, Sayin said, those two wrongs just now, were they my wrongs or your wrongs? Tempio said, my wrongs. The commentator here, with this response of Tempio, where he says, my wrong. Commentator says, he mistakes a saddle ridge for his father's lower jaw. As for such patch-robe monks as this one, even if you killed 1,000 or 10,000 of them, what crime would it be? So we're given some valuable clues by these comments. He may have thought, this Tempio may have thought, well, as long as I take responsibility and as long as I find the fault lying within myself, then he'll approve. Or, who knows, maybe when he said that, he saw some lack in his earlier responses. At this point in the koan, we don't know. And Sayin said, after Tempio said, my wrongs, Sayin said, wrong. You can see Sayin is determined to pin him to the wall, back him into a corner. But is it having any effect? Tempio said nothing. Even that is a point of the koan. What kind of nothing was that? What kind of silence was that? In this translation by Cleary, it says Tempio gave up. And then Sayin said, stay here this summer and let's discuss the two wrongs. But Tempio went away. For Sayin to have specially invited him to stay and train with him, at the temple, he must have seen something of value in this Tempio. But it wasn't the right time. Tempio declined the offer and went away. That itself tells us something about Tempio. It doesn't say that he had a previous commitment. He just went away. Let's pause now and read some more commentary here. Regarding this invitation from Sayin, Yuan Wu says, Sayin's spine is usually hard as iron. Why did he not immediately drive Tempio away? As for that original statement that Tempio would make, do not say you understand Buddhism, I cannot find a single man who can speak of it. This commentator, Yuan Wu, says, because he had gone to various places and attained this turnip Zen and put it in his belly, everywhere he went, he scornfully opened his big mouth and said, I understand Zen. I understand the way. He always said, do not say you understand Buddhism. I cannot find even a single man who can speak of it. His stinking breath affected others, and he only indulged in scorn and contempt. Oh, that's a pretty good clue as to how he said that. As for that first exchange, when Sayin first told him wrong, it says here, Tempio did not grasp his straightforward action, but just said, I have a belly full of Zen, and didn't pay any attention to him, and went two or three steps. Sayin said, wrong, but Tempio was as muddled as before, and approached Sayin. Well, the harder part of this koan is yet to come. It says later, we don't know how much later, when Tempio was abbot of his own temple, he said to his disciples, when I was on a pilgrimage, I was blown by the wind of events to Abbot Sayin, who told me twice that I was wrong and tried to keep me there over the summer to wait for him to deal with me. It was not then that I was wrong, however, but when I first started south on my pilgrimage, I already knew that I was wrong. Now this, what is his meaning here? The commentator in Yuan Wu in the Blue Cliff Record says, when people these days hear him saying, when I first started south on my pilgrimage, I already knew that I was wrong, they immediately go figuring it out and say, before even going on foot travels, there is naturally not so much Buddhism or Zen. And when you go foot traveling, you are completely fooled by people everywhere. Even before foot travels, you can't call earth sky or call mountains rivers. Fortunately, there is nothing to be concerned about at all. And then Yuan Wu says, if you entertain such common vulgar views, why not buy a bandana to wear and pass your time in the boss's house? What is the use? Buddha's teaching is not this principle. So what he's citing here is a stance that apparently used to be not an uncommon one among these hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of monks in ancient China, where they would have some smattering of understanding about the teaching of emptiness, and then, as if without having any experience of it, they would take this pose and say, well, after all, there is nothing to this Zen, to Buddhism, to the Dharma, nothing to do, nowhere to go, nothing to be concerned about. And they would go about frivolously wasting their time in the monastery. I've very seldom come across this among practitioners here at this center. Every once in a great while, someone, usually in Sesshin, will get into a state where they take this stance, but sincerely, they're not just mouthing words. They think this is the way things are. They might come and say, "Well, okay, well, moo is moo. That's it. What's to talk about? What's to show? What's to do? What's to understand?" And on and on, in this blithe, disdainful manner. But it seems to be a bit of more of a problem at some other centers, where they don't know how to deal with awakening, with the experience of awakening. And so they take this pose where they say, oh, as soon as you speak of enlightenment, you're defiling our true nature. As soon as you speak of it, you are dividing the indivisible. And you know, it's one thing for someone of deep understanding to say this, and we've come across this in the texts, but for someone who hasn't had the faintest insight into their true nature to take this stance is obnoxious. I heard of someone at another center, a big Soto center, who would declare, "I don't give a shit about enlightenment," implying we're all enlightened from the beginning. What is there to talk about? What is this what use do we have for this term, this concept, this word? I'm beyond this. I have no truck with this term, enlightenment or delusion. It's such a pathetic kind of dodge, avoidance of the work that has to be done. There are always, we can always see reality, life, the world, from two sides, from what we can call the essential aspect, and then from the provisional or the relative aspect. From the essential aspect, there is only this enlightened nature. You can't divide people or the world into enlightenment and delusion. Our essential nature, essentially, we are enlightened. There's nothing to get, there's nothing to attain, there's nothing to realize. We're born enlightened, we'll die enlightened, from the essentials perspective, in our true nature. But it's just half the story, and so it's not complete. It's not true because it's not complete. The other side is that until we have awakened to that truth, we can't really say that we're enlightened. We have to confirm it through direct experience. And it is this experience, this awakening experience, that it's already in the short history of Zen in the West is already getting muddled, where it's becoming denied in many places. It's like enlightenment or awakening is a dirty word at some Zen centers. We even see this at our annual Zen teachers meetings, where there have been times, I've been to, I don't know, maybe 10 of them or so, and there have been times where we go around the room and we outline what criteria we have for Dharma transmission. And when I or someone else might say, well, there has to be insight into one's true nature and then so forth. And then one of the teachers at these other centers would say, well, that's a different model than ours. A different model. What a tragedy to have encountered the Dharma and then to play this game about how there's nothing to do, nowhere to go, nothing to attain. It's said in Buddhism that it is so rare to be born. First of all, it's rare to be born into a human body. It's extraordinarily rare. But far more rare is it to encounter the Dharma in this human body. As rare, the Buddha said, as rare as it is that where a deep sea turtle would come to the surface of the water just every once a year and just happen by chance to pierce, when piercing the water, to pierce a wooden yoke floating on the sea. Those are the odds. Those are the infinitesimal odds, according to the Buddha, of us reaching this place where we are now. And then to take this position that there's nothing we have to do. One master said, to be born a human being and not to realize one's true nature is to have lived in vain. Well, those are strong words. I don't know that I would go along with that. But the point is, what an opportunity now. And what an opportunity at this stage of Sesshin, day 6, almost day 7. There's so much clarity, so much joriki energy. This samadhi power has accumulated in this zendo. No matter where you think you are, you think that you're stalled out, you've got a lot of thoughts in your mind, underneath those thoughts is this vast reservoir of energy and clarity, emptiness, purity. everyone's mind here now is far more open, ready, clear than it was 6 days ago. Far more. Roshi Kapla used to say it would take another 6 days of effort to reach this point of readiness in the mind. The catch-22 of all this is that so long as we have the thought of awakening in the mind, we'll miss it. We have to supplant, we have to replace that thought with the simple experience of the practice, the mu. The what? Who become absolutely, absolutely, absolutely absorbed in that one word, that one question. We don't have to deny the possibility of awakening to not traffic in thoughts about awakening. Have to believe that there's nothing else you need to do. There's nowhere else you need to put your mind except on this one matter, this one word. Or question. The real impediment is when people bring the I into the practice, become self-conscious about getting through or not getting through, bring the notion of time into it, in absolute samadhi, mu samadhi, or any kind of samadhi, there is no time. There is no time. Time is a concept. When you're in samadhi, there's no concept. You're free of time. Just this one practice. What is it? We'll stop now and recite the four vows.